Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. We're premiering a new feature on Smart Talk today. First Friday, the first Friday of every month, we're devoting the program to the arts, with particular attention on the arts in central Pennsylvania. We'll talk with artists, musicians, actors, directors, anyone and anything connected to the arts.
Do the hip shake, baby. Do the hip shake, baby. Shake your hips, baby.
Not something you normally hear on Smart Talk, that seven-time Grammy Award nominee Joan Osborne, who is one of 80 musicians performing 100 concerts at seven venues on 10 stages at Lancaster Roots and Blues, a festival of music and art, October 15th, 16th, and 17th in Lancaster, 2 weeks from now. Our very first Friday guest is Rich Ruoff, director of Lancaster Roots and Blues. Rich, welcome to the program. For someone who isn't familiar, how would you describe Lancaster Roots and Blues? And by the way, I have to tell you that it took all my willpower not to listen to the whole number there by Joan Osborne. But getting back to the show, how would you describe Lancaster Roots and Blues?
Well, hi, Scott. Thank you for having me on. And I like the format, your new First Friday endeavor for the arts. That's great. Lancaster Roots and Blues, it's simple. It's a three-day music festival. We have 10 stages at seven different venues, all within three blocks of each other. And it's a wristbanded thing. So you get your wristband and you can go from venue to venue. We are doing 80 different artists, musical artists this year. And between them, they're going to play about 100 concerts. And it's, of course, you know, the title is Roots and Blues. And we have blues, of course, is a big part of it. But roots, I have a pretty broad definition of that. Americana, bluegrass, jazz, some funk and soul, rock and roll and rockabilly. So there's a little bit of everything for everybody.
Well, so you kind of anticipated my next question, because I was going to ask about roots. That is one of the things that makes your festival so unique, is that you have so many genres of music. And I have to say, Rich, that going to your website where you have samples, there's videos of the artist. I mean, you could sit there all day just listening on your website to the music, but it would be much better in person. Do you have goals that you're trying to achieve with each festival?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I've been doing this music business for a little while. For those who are familiar with Lancaster, I opened Chameleon Club in 1985 when I was a young man. And we had a nice run there. I eventually sold the club, and it had just recently gone out of business. So they had 35 years it was at that location. But over the course of that time, we did a lot of different kinds of live music. So I missed the scene. I had been out of music for a while, and then I saw Lancaster bubbling up, and I thought, what if we took all these different venues and, made it one big festival? And so that's what we're doing. And the goal here, the short-term goal every year is just to put on the best music I can find and really make it a fun event. And there's a lot of energy in town. It's not just seeing the music, but it's the energy of passing other people on the street from venue to venue. People feel good about what they just saw, and they're excited about what they're going to see, and they run into other people and they talk about the bands they saw. They run into them in the restaurants and the pubs. So it's a positive energy thing, but I have a long-term goal of building one of the best festivals in America. Not one of the biggest, because we're not out in the desert somewhere we can hold 100,000 people, but a consistent high quality festival where people are willing to travel and make it a big event for themselves.
Of course, the Chameleon Club, legendary in Lancaster and central Pennsylvania, and has just carried over to the festival. And you say, now you just touched on this, but you say one of the best festivals in America. How would you define best?
I think, if you live in California and you look at the schedule and you go, you know what? I like going to music festivals, and the schedule is good or better than anything I've seen. So I'm willing to catch a plane or drive across the country and come to this festival. And not just California, of course, but anywhere in the country. We even sell tickets to Europeans, though COVID's keeping it down this year. But Canadians, actually, we just one Canadian, unfortunately, just called and said that they just shut the border again because of the COVID spike. Like, oh, come on. But so I don't know if he's going to make it. But yeah, all up and down the East Coast, of course, people come and then from all around the country.
How do you establish a reputation like that?
It really comes down to the music. I mean, if consistently you have a variety of choices that set a high bar and people feel the same way as, you know, I do, that's how the reputation grows. It grows festival to festival.
Yeah, but you say the music is, you know, and I think a lot of people can look at that and say, yeah, that's what attracts me to coming or going to a festival. But at the same time, it has to be run well. I mean, I just saw, and I don't know whether you've seen it or not, documentary about Woodstock 99 that was a fiasco. And, you know, a lot of people didn't enjoy themselves. So people have to enjoy themselves as well as the music. So what goes into making this a good festival? I mean, operating it so that everything goes smoothly.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's well, first of all, we're indoors, which is helpful because then you're not, you know, beholden to the vagaries of weather. And the weather continues to change year round. Doesn't matter what time of year we hold this festival. There's always seems to be something. If it's not going to be snow, it's going to be 100 degrees or tropical depressions or whatever. So hopefully we'll have some good weather this October. So logistics, you know, it's an exercise in logistics, and I think I'm pretty good at that. So we try and get every band on within 5 minutes of when we advertise that they will be on. And there's something to be said for that, especially if you've taken the time to go through the website and you've picked out a dozen or 20. I even had one guy 1 year said, I saw 43 bands this year,
which I'm
insane. Wow. You know, so it's knowing that the band that you wanted to see is on the stage at the time that you asked them to be on, that's helpful. And then I think we put some effort into the quality of the production. So typically the sound is good, the light's good, the sight lines are good in the different venues. And then I work hard to pick the right band for the right venue. And that's a little bit of a guessing game. You know, we have different size venues. We have large venues. The main stage in the convention center is the biggest. And then we have intimate venues like Zootropolis, which is a cool little art movie house that also has a stage. And so you don't want to put too big a band on a small venue, and you don't want to put too small of a band in a big venue. And I say small or big, that's a relative term, but it's about who they draw or how many people we expect them to draw. But I, you know, my years in the business, I think I'm pretty good at this. And so we tend not to overfill the venues. You know, they tend to, we've been lucky that way. Only a handful of times that we had to shut the doors and say, sorry, this one is shut. So,
You know, as I'm picturing this, the big venues, the smaller venues, is there a genre of music that attracts the most people? Or maybe I could add to that. Is it the more well-known musicians who attract the most, or is there a genre of music that attracts the most?
Well, we get two distinct audiences. You know, we get your hardcore music fan who just knows or loves to see new music or knows a variety of music. So they're excited and they're going to go see everybody they can, or they'll pick out at least their favorites in a variety of genres. But then there are what you call the trigger acts, usually a main stage artist that somebody's, you know, they live in Washington, D.C., and they're reading the Washington Post, they see the article, and they say, oh, you know what? Let's go see Davina and the Vagabonds. And they make the trip. And that was the artist that made them pay for the ticket, or Joan Osborne, as you played earlier, or Eric Gales, a new hot guitar player. Billy Price, very well known in Pennsylvania. He used to be Billy Price in the Keystone Rhythm Band. He also has the Charm City Rhythm Band. So when he plays East, he plays with the Charm City Rhythm Band out of Baltimore. When he plays West, he plays with the Keystone Rhythm Band out of Pittsburgh. But so certainly there are certain driving acts. I would say that the, you know, Lancashire Roots and Blues, it is predominantly a blues festival, but you can, so that's, you know, that's the big driver. but you can spend the whole weekend and see a lot of shows and not even see a blues band. It's really what you like.
Our guest on our very first Friday focusing on the arts in Central Pennsylvania is Rich Ruoff, director of Lancaster Roots and Blues. And, you know, that's just an example, one example of the 100 concerts that you can hear at 80 musicians at Lancaster Roots and Blues. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Rich, you know, I've always wondered, you were talking about being the best festival in America, one of the best festivals in America. Do you seek the musicians, or are there some that seek you once the festival has a reputation?
Well, in the... I seek out. I really, I don't request, I'm not on the search for demo tapes, as it were. Nobody uses tapes, of course, anymore. Demo links. So I reach out to the artists or their agents directly and ask them. Of course, I do get submissions, and I do hire some from time to time, because it's not just national artists. We do a lot of regional artists, and we do some local artists as well. So it's a nice mix of, across all platforms. But it's really my vision. I still get surprised. Once in a while, an agent will turn me on to somebody new, or I have connections from the music business for the last 35 years. So people will call me from different parts of the country or email me and say, hey, check these people out. They're the real deal. And, and these are people I respect. And I start to, so it's pretty easy to find the artist that I'm looking for. Mm.
And when you say you're looking for, are you thinking about that variety? Are you thinking about, this is going to draw a big crowd? What are your thoughts going into it?
Yeah, so the promoter end of it, I have to certainly hire some artists that I believe will draw well. But the music fan part of it, which is also my big driver, I mean, obviously I can't afford to lose money every year, but the driver would be bands that move me, and that would include, it has to feel authentic to me, whatever the genre of music is. It doesn't necessarily have to be blues. They have to play with, they have to be masters of their instruments. That's a no-brainer, but there are some really tight projects out there, musicians who play really well, who don't have any, what I would say, soul. There's nothing what I would consider special about the music. So I'm really looking for something that, and you can feel it live, that hey, these guys can pull it off, these men and women or whatever. They can pull it off, and it's gonna rock you to your core. How's that?
Most of the musicians, are they playing original music, or are there some cover bands?
These are mostly original bands. I don't think I have any straight up cover bands this year. Certainly in blues, there's only so many riffs, and there's only so many. I mean, a lot of even the great original blues band will certainly cover the classic, they'll throw in some classic covers. So I don't think anybody's 100% original, but it's definitely not cover bands.
I misspoke. I should have said covering some of the, some of the classics. Let's take a phone call from Eric in Lancaster. Eric, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi, good morning, both of you. Just want to start off by saying I love the kind of shift to focus in on arts in Pennsylvania, and so far loving the discussion to this point. I just kind of generally wanted to ask, we're living in a time of COVID right now. If this is particular, maybe if the festival isn't kind of maybe poorly timed at this juncture, Lancaster right now, the numbers of infections and hospitalizations, at least within medical infrastructure, we're at a limit. And so I guess my general concern is, you know, for the vulnerable population living in and around the area, you know, will there, do you anticipate there's going to be some sort of spike related to people traveling from across the country? And then, you know, was there any consideration to making the full festival kind of more outdoors to try to suit the COVID, you know, climate?
Eric, thank you very much for your call. I know that, Rich, you do have some COVID protocols on your website. So his concerns, I'm sure there are other people who maybe are not ready to get outside or get outside the house at this point. How do you take that into account?
Yeah, no, I mean, when we released the schedule back in the spring, it was because we had the vaccine and we thought, okay, everybody's going to get it and it's just going to get better and better. This COVID spike certainly has been annoying. So that said, the music industry has come up with some pretty interesting COVID policies, and we feel we have one of the best in the business. You, of course, have to have either a vaccine and show proof of vaccine. And we even created an online portal for that so that, I mean, you can certainly bring your card to the festival to get admission, but you can actually data enter your vaccine card, and then they will issue, the company will issue a scan on your phone. So when you show in, you show your phone and you get scanned in the first time to get your wristband. And then also, if you don't have that, there's you need to show proof of a negative test. And you say, well, okay, that's a pain. But what we've done is contracted with a company who's going to set up a testing trailer right outside the entrance of the box office, which is at the Lancaster Convention Center. And you can just go and get your test right there. In fact, they're setting up 3 days before. So you can go and get a PCR test and they'll notify you within 24 hours if you're negative or positive. So is it foolproof? No, it's not going to be a hermetically sealed event, but the overwhelming majority of people are going to have vaccines or a negative test. And otherwise they can't get in. So we like it, but I understand, you know, certainly people who are immune compromised, they probably want to wait till next year. But we think that this will not generate a spike. And thankfully, the numbers are dropping across the country. So two more weeks of that, and that's a good sign. We're confident we can pull this off safely.
What you just described with proof of vaccination or a proof of a negative test and setting up a test site right outside the venue, is that widespread in the music industry now? I mean, we've heard, it seems as though the musicians that either require vaccinations or won't play venues where vaccinations are required are the ones getting all the attention. But is that widespread what you're doing?
It's widespread in the major markets. They just did it at a blues festival out in Las Vegas, a big one. And they had a 96% of the people who attended were vaccinated, which is, I think, phenomenal. If we had that nationwide, this thing would be done, meaning COVID. But it's the standard. I mean, I had to do it. You know, people say, oh, Rich, you're so political. No, politics has nothing to do with it. I'm practical. I would have lost half of our national acts who would have canceled if we didn't come up with this policy. And then the whole festival would have fallen apart. So we have 80 bands coming. They're excited to be coming. They're vaccinated. And, you know, so there's a handful of local artists who are going to just go for the test. But, you know, the bulk of the band is vaccinated. The touring nationals, they get it because they have to travel. They have to be on trains and buses and planes and cars and they're playing in different venues regularly, so they're all vaccinated.
Did they ask the managers, the people that you reached out to schedule these acts? Did they ask if you had a policy in place?
Oh yeah, they not only asked, they demanded it. I mean, they're like, you know, we're right now, we prefer to play in places that are doing this, and so I was really a no-brainer for me. I'm like, for sure.
So it's not just music at the Lancaster Roots and Blues. There's an art expo, too. Lancaster, of course, has been gaining a reputation as an arts venue over the last decade or so. Tell me about the art expo.
The Art Expo. Yeah, so we're expanding. I mean, Lancaster's not only a music town, it's also a nice art town. We have a really dynamic art scene, a lot of artists, of course, and a lot of art galleries. And I love what they're doing there. They've been part of the Renaissance of Lancaster, and I thought it was important to roll that in. And so we're slowly developing that aspect of it. And so in the convention center, where our main stage is, in the hall where the box office is, we're having artists and artisans and craftsmen have booths. So they'll be displaying their wares and their artwork there. And we also created a smaller stage in that room that's going to be more like a beer wine garden situation. And it's called the front porch stage, and it's set up like a front porch on a cabin out in the woods. And that'll be an acoustic stage, so we'll have some cool acoustic artists playing in there as kind of a, you know, some music to keep that arts expo going.
That sounds cool, with the front porch and the acoustics. You hold up Lancaster, and this I noticed right off the bat on your website. You hold up Lancaster as a vibrant place for this, that Lancaster is just the perfect locale for doing this. What place does the city have in this?
They are happy that I'm doing it. It's really my event, and it's my gift to Lancaster. And, you know, I keep doing it. And, you know, it's an economic driver, a huge economic driver. Of course, we fill all the hotels. We fill all the restaurants. You know, the art galleries do business, and just all, even the retail, just general retail in town really does well. So it's just a positive all around for the city.
But as I said, Lancaster is, you hold up as a vibrant place. Does that make a difference in the success of this, that if you were going to do this in a sleepy little town, that it wouldn't be quite as successful as what it is in Lancaster?
Well, yeah, I mean, a couple things. We're blessed with a lot of performance venues. For a town our size, that's unusual. So, you know, that adds to the vibrancy. And then, sorry, I got sidetracked. I was looking at the schedule.
I do that all the time. Live radio.
Go ahead, ask me again.
So could you do this in a sleepy little town, or does Lancaster make it unique?
It's such a beautiful Victorian town. It's one of the oldest cities in America. Lancaster's been on the up and, you know, coming up in the world in the last 20 years. Or 25 years, but it's been a steady progression. It's one of the reasons I decided to do the festival, because I thought this would work here, where it may not work in some other cities or towns, and work at the level I want it to work at. We have the infrastructure, we have the venues, we have hotels, we have parking, so it makes life a little easier to logistically to run the event. And the vibrancy is that there's a scene, there's an art scene, there's a restaurant scene. Which I consider restaurants part of the arts. We have a lot of independent restaurants, not just chain restaurants. And so a lot of effort goes into creating some, you know, wonderful food situations. And that all adds to the thing. And then we have a huge theater scene too. So you have theater, you have the visual arts, the fine arts, and you have a great music scene. Combined, it just makes for a wonderful little town.
Lancaster Roots and Blues, a festival of music and art, October 15th, 16th, and 17th in Lancaster. Ticket information. Rich, how can those who are listening today, if they're interested in attending maybe one or all 3 days, how could they do that?
That's great. Yeah, so we sell 1 day, 2 day, and 3 day tickets. We also do some VIP tickets, but those are sold out. We sold those out months ago, so that's always a big run. So you can go right to our website, LancasterRootsAndBlues.com, spell it out. And then there's a ticket link on every page. You just click on the tickets and you can buy it online. If that doesn't work for you, you can call into the office, and the phone number's on the website. Or if that doesn't work for you, just show up the weekend of the festival, and we will sell them at the door, at the gate. Of course, you know, bring your vaccine card or your proof of negative test. Ideally, you get your negative test, you know, in your town at your local drugstore, whoever does it for you. But if need be, you can do it at the trailer here at the convention center.
Rich Ruoff is director of Lancaster Roots and Blues. Rich, very first Friday guest. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Scott. Oh, I just want to mention real quick, the Delvon Lamar Organ Trio is coming from Seattle, Washington. I love that band. And I'm sure you're not related, but I thought, you know, Scott Lamar, it's got to be similar.
Why do you think we're not related?
Well, I don't think I've ever met you. But take a look at the photo on the website and let me know if you think you're related.
Hey, well, I got one more email for you from Brad. It says, many years ago, I saw Los Lobos in Lancaster. I'm not a fan of their style of music, yet it was one of the best live shows I ever saw. Meeting in a huddle together, the band picked encore after encore. They and the audience had a great night. So maybe that was at the Chameleon.
And that was a great concert. Cesar, the leader of the band, was just hugging me after the concert. He says, one of the best shows we ever did, and it was amazing. That was a Monday night, sold out. They did four encores in a row. People absolutely loved it.
On a Monday night?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Rich Ruoff, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Take care, Scott.
Sprocket Mural Works has been bringing larger-than-life artworks in the form of murals to central Pennsylvania for the past 7 years. You've probably seen many of their murals in Harrisburg, York, and Steelton. All told, there are around 75 of them. But there's a milestone, 50th mural being produced in the 1500 block of North 6th Street in Harrisburg now through Sunday. Joining us to tell us more about it is Meg Caruso. She is the president and co-founder of Sprocket Mural Works. Meg Caruso, thank you very much for being with us today. 50th mural in Harrisburg, a milestone for you, not just because of the number, right? Why is this a milestone?
Well, this is a milestone because, you know, this particular mural is one of many murals where we partner with local organizations, you know, to kind of like speak to and, you know, give life to like a topic. And this particular topic is in support of the Humane Society, the Harrisburg Humane Society. And it features, you know, the special bond between a pet and an adopted pet and a person. And, you know, we've produced over 75 murals throughout York, Lancaster, and Harrisburg. And to reach 50 in our hometown is just very exciting for us. We've come a long way, and we're really excited to produce more with the community.
Would you say that you partner with local organizations? How do you partner for a mural?
So, for example, one of our first projects, this mural festival, we partnered with Tri-County Community Action. They are in process of producing planters throughout the Allison Hill neighborhood along Derry Street and Market Street. And so we connected with them and reached out to local artists from the Allison Hill neighborhood. We went door to door, handed out flyers for paid opportunities with artists. And we brought artists from the community to paint them. I mean, another example of this is Recycle Bicycle. Recycle Bicycle is an amazing organization where you can go and learn how to build a bike, and then you get to keep that bike. We worked with them. They were one of our first mural projects, and they recently moved. And in their new location, they missed the mural that they had on their old location. They really felt that it was, you know, a bright light in the community. So we again partnered with them, and their volunteers helped to raise money to, you know, beautify their building with a local artist. And we featured, you know, children on bikes and the joy of having a bike and having transportation. And yeah, so those are just a few examples. We've also partnered with the Nature Conservancy in 2019 for a mural to celebrate wildlife along the Kittatinny Mountain Range. That mural is located right in downtown Harrisburg across from the Capitol. So and additionally, you know, from our start, we worked with the community to find out what kind of murals people want to see. We go door to door, we show pictures of different types of murals. So it's a type of polling. We also have online where you can, you know, tell us like what kind of murals you want to see in your neighborhood. And so we see that as one of our strongest community partnerships, painting images that people feel will be uplifting and that they, that will make them happy and feel good and feel civic pride.
You actually go door to door. How do those conversations go? I mean, what do you say when someone approaches someone at the door and says, hey, you know, we're thinking about putting a mural here? Is that how the conversation goes?
Yeah, that's how the conversation goes. And honestly, I'm always impressed when people answer their doors. When people come to my door, hi. but it's wonderful, particularly in the Allison Hill neighborhood. I find people to be extremely warm. So when I approach and I knock on the door, sometimes my favorite is when children answer the door because I'm there and I have a piece of paper that has examples of different types of murals. You know, it'll show people, animals, nature, abstract, like we have like a whole kind of list of images. And I'll say, hi, you know, we're here, we're gonna paint a mural around the corner in your neighborhood. And we wanna know what you'd like to see, like what's gonna make you the happiest to see every day. And then I'll hear like mom at the top of the stairs asking like, who's at the door? And then, you know, mom comes down and like, I'll explain. And, you know, we always get big smiles. People are excited about it. And then more kids and family members will emerge from the house and everyone will vote on which one they like the best.
So you take into account what the kids like too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We also, we've set up, you know, this past summer, we spent a lot of time in Allison Hill. We set up at the farmer's market there on Derry Street. And it's similar. We have pictures. We give people stickers. And so like little dots and they put it right next to the mural that they're the most excited about. And these are just examples of types of mural. It's not the finished one. But yeah, I think engaging with the community in this manner and finding out what people want to see really gives purpose to the work that we're producing.
You talk about engagement. And I know that one of the things that Sprocket Mural Works is big in your mission, if you want to call it that, is civic pride as well. So how does a mural create engagement and civic pride as well?
Oh, in so many ways. And, you know, we learned this early on. So our first murals were actually on condemned buildings. When they condemn a building, they board up the windows and doors. And we worked with community members to paint flowers and leaves and plant life and all kinds of things. And we found that neighbors felt pride immediately, you know, and to have more control over their environment. Neighbors were connecting with each other that hadn't met before. It actually led to community cleanups. And so that's just like one, you know, I think a small example of how it leads to pride. But also, as humans, we're all extremely sensitive to our environment. Like it filters through how we feel about ourselves. It, you know, it reflects how we feel about ourselves. And, you know, we've really looked at a lot of research that hospitals have been doing. Putting art in a hospital room helps people heal faster. It causes them to feel less pain, so they require less medication. And that always blows me away, you know, like art can make you feel less pain. And it's like the natural mechanisms of your body, you know, support yourself. So we've always wondered, all right, so these studies are examples of individuals in a hospital room with a piece of art. So what does a three-story mural, like a beautiful, vibrant mural that thousands of people see each day, how does that affect them? How does that make them feel? And, you know, we get a lot of feedback when we're producing murals. You're like a magnet. If you're out in the street painting, everyone wants to come and talk to you. And we've had so many experiences where, like, I can think of one where there's this man, I watched him cross the street, like holding his heart in his chest. And he just kept saying, thank you. He was just so grateful. And then he said to me, he's like, I grew up here and we didn't have this and we needed it so badly. And I have children now, and I'm so glad that they get to grow up with this and experience this. And this is like a, you know, complete stranger. And it was a very moving moment. And, you know, we recently painted the Mulberry Street Bridge, which is along a road that connects Allison Hill into downtown. And hundreds of cars each day would just honk. People would yell thank you out their window. There's this one moment where this man pulled up on the bridge and started expressing so much gratitude. And he was like, I'm not a wealthy man, but I want to contribute. I want to help. I want to support this. And then he just handed us cash. He's like, I want to buy you guys lunch. There were like six of us working on the mural at the time. And, you know, to have these interactions, to have these responses from strangers, to have people come and tell me, you know, I've lived in Harrisburg for 20 years and I've never seen anything like this. And it's just overwhelmingly positive. So I think it's really undeniable how it makes people feel proud of where they are and how feeling that really, again, just like filters through how they see themselves in a place.
On this Smart Talk First Friday, we're speaking with Meg Caruso, Sprocket Mural Works president and co-founder. We'll be talking with an artist in just a few minutes. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Phone number, once again, 1-800-729-7532. So, Meg, let's go back a little bit. Tell me about the history of Sprocket Mural Works. 7 years now. How did you start? How did you come up with the idea for doing this? And, you know, what were your goals at the time? What did you want to do?
There's so many reasons why we started Sprocket. I think to start, for me personally, I've lived in Harrisburg for almost 18 years now. I'm from the area. And, you know, I've always loved Harrisburg, but actually, I volunteer for Sprocket. We're all volunteers, but I work for the Berg. And once I started really diving into the stories of our people and our culture and all of the amazing things that happened here, that's like when I fell head over heels in love for Harrisburg. And so that, you know, inspired me to want to, you know, do what I can to nourish this place.
Why murals?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt. Why murals?
So murals, around that time, my sister lived in Europe for 10 years in multiple countries, and every time I would visit her, I would see public art everywhere, and I loved how that represented the spirit and the culture of a place. So the idea started percolating around, okay, like what would that look like for here? And we spent about a year doing research on how to start, a mural organization, a mural project. We talked to people from all over the country, and, you know, and what the reason for murals is, it's really the fastest way to make something vibrant, like make something that like stands out, that's like a part of your environment. And, there's also the element of a lot of people are really privileged and that they get to go to art museums and they get to see beautiful art, but having art outside and just a part of our life and being exposed to it in our daily walks, I think is really valuable and powerful for people.
Hmm. Let's take a phone call from Mark in Harrisburg. Mark, you're on Smart Talk.
Good morning. I'm calling with kind of a suggestion or a request. There was a mural on McClay Street between 6th and 7th Street that featured Frederick Douglass on the side of a building that appears to be vacant or abandoned now. That mural was there for a few decades, and I'd like to see it restored. I'm wondering if the group Sprocket Works would be interested in taking on that job.
Hmm. Hey, Mark, thank you very much for your call. You know, he brings up a good point. I mean, first of all, about that specific project, but when you have suggestions like that, how do you take on that, a project?
So we take suggestions for all kinds of projects. People will reach out to us and say, I have a wall, you know, I would love to see something here. We haven't yet explored restoring murals. One, because the cost to restore a mural rather than paint a new one is significant. It's like two or three times the amount. So we have been approached for a couple of mural restorations, and that's not something that we've explored just yet. But we have done a lot of research on that particular wall. And the artist, she lives in New Mexico now. She's done murals all over Harrisburg. It was produced in the 70s, I want to say 72. But I also feel, and you know, I don't know if it's a popular opinion, but I also feel like when art ages outside, like for example, the old faded like Coca-Cola signs, I think that those are beautiful in their own right. You know, like murals tell a story of history and time, like when that was produced. And, you know, I think in the future, would we be interested in figuring out how to restore murals? Absolutely. Right now, we're a very small organization of volunteers, and that's just not something that we've been able to take on yet.
I want to turn now to Brian King Prolific Hickman, who is a mural artist. Hey, Brian, or should I call you King?
Whichever you prefer.
How does one get a nickname of King Prolific?
So Prolific was a name that I just, it just stuck with me throughout the years. There was a period in time where people on Facebook were just like changing their middle names to just crazy things. So Prolific was like one of my favorite vocab terms that I learned in English class. And, you know, after like researching its meaning and everything, it kind of stuck with me. So I changed the C into a K. And then it hit me when people, like my friends, would address me as Prolific in person, not even my name anymore. So I was just like, okay, well, I'll rock out with that. And that became my alias. So this year I actually added the King, as like a way to solidify where I'm at in my artistry and as a person as well, just digging more into my roots and getting a sense of appreciation so that I can pour more into what I do.
Well, let's talk about what you do. You have a mural that you're going to be, am I right? You're starting that this weekend, right?
Yes. Yep.
Tell me about it. Where is it? And what are you looking to do?
It's on 3rd Street. It's right behind the One Stop gas station. Having Meg and just Sprocket reach out to me for this type of project was just, it was humbling in its own way because I've always known of Sprocket. So I never really like thought that I'd be reached out for a project this big at this magnitude. So the project itself, I was told is the significance behind it would be to celebrate Black lives. So that already means a lot to me. So to, you know, have that responsibility to make sure I'm creating a type of imagery that gives that type of feel and appreciation is just amazing.
What do you have in mind?
As far as the imagery goes, I chose to have a Black woman in profile, her head to the side, wearing a kente cloth head wrap. And then she'll also be donning a large hoop earring. And inside the hoop earring, there will be a little Black girl reading a book.
Now, okay, size obviously is different when you're talking about painting a mural compared to, say, a piece of art on a canvas. But how is it different? I mean, besides size, what do you have to do?
It's definitely a big challenge, and I caught a piece of that challenge when we were working on the Mulberry Street Bridge. It's committing to a time frame and making sure that you're not feeling too pressure, but at the same time just like keeping yourself motivated to bring a large image out the way it needs to come out. So with that, the difference between like painting on a wall versus a canvas, like Meg said before, you have a lot of distractions from the community, just voicing their support and everything. So, there's a challenge of staying focused throughout the whole thing. You have to deal with sunlight. Sometimes the color is on the wall are going to look way different when the sun goes down as opposed to when the sun's out and, you know, giving you natural daylight to be able to paint something. Layers, you got to worry about layers, making sure, every part of your image is covering what was underneath. You don't want any dullness showing through at all, but there's a lot to consider and be mindful of during the process, but it definitely is something that you can get lost in as an artist.
How much do you plan your mural? Can you ad lib?
So one thing I learned is when it comes to imagery, it's one thing that you have to have planned in advance. Ad libbing usually comes in like subtle details, like maybe she needs an extra eyelash here, or maybe this needs to be tweaked a little bit. But as far as the overall imagery, that's something that it's for time's sake, it's better to have planned out so that, there's no extra time being spent trying to figure out what could have been or what could have looked like this or what could have looked like that. So, for time management, it's definitely important to have that already planned out.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the finished piece, Brian Hickman. Meg, let me go back to you. We have about a minute left. I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Meg, you have several murals in the works. I mean, besides Brian this weekend, you have another plus even next week. You have so what can people do if they'd like to be part of that community engagement or just come out and watch?
Yeah, so they can visit our website. We have a map of all of our murals on our site. I also recommend they follow us on social media. We're pretty active there, posting in stories of, real-time murals being like happening. We have a number of murals coming up, about 5 through October, and then our season will come to a close.
Well, weather has a lot to do with that, I'm sure. But so the best place to find out what's going on is go to the website?
That's correct.
What is your website?
And our website is sprocketmuralworks.com, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Sprocket Mural Works.
Meg Caruso is president, co-founder of Sprocket Mural Works, and Brian Hickman, one of the mural artists, looking forward to his work this weekend. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.